Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
It's The Fan Morning Show. I'm JD Bunkus. Ailish Warfar back. Back from Montreal. Back from hanging out with the stars at F1. What a glamorous weekend she had until she actually went to the racetrack. Our next guest was like, I don't know, wearing the hip waders yesterday. He's out there now today. He's back in the saddle. He's probably heard a lot of music very much like that out on the road. What's going on, Stephen Brunton? How are we doing?
Hey, yeah, just like that. We wear our hip waders and listen to that. That's exactly
right. that's how I picture what's going down with you. It's like, yeah, salsa music and just like hanging out. Hey, who cares if we catch a fish? Like, it doesn't matter. We've got our salsa music. Okay, I'm going to start with this. Kevin Biggio, Raimel Tapia, both guys have OPSs of over 850 the last month. Tapia is 880. Mm-hmm. And Biggio, actually, sorry, I lied. He's 829. I had combined their two things, but yeah, Biggio's 829. I've been pretty critical of both guys. I never thought, like, my main criticism with Biggio was you throw him heaters for strikes, he's not going to catch up to them. If you put him in an advantageous count, he can do something with it. He can draw a walk. He obviously is a patient hitter, but wasn't really sure the bat was going to end up playing and that the defensive versatility wasn't real. Tapia, same thing, where I thought, hey, maybe this guy can't really play outfield defense and that the bat is just like it doesn't play. Are you buying this last month from these two guys? Is there one you're buying more than the other? Like, how do you feel about the lefty bats right now?
Well, I would say skeptical. That's how I would feel. I guess because, you know, we've seen Kevin Biggio for longer, kind of have a better sense of what he is and, you know, I guess kind of what he was, but that was before it kind of felt like the league caught up to him and they figured some stuff out. Yes, he does have a great eye at the plate, an unbelievable eye at the plate, but, you know, we've also seen him, I've seen him watch a lot of strike threes too, sometimes legitimately because they're in the zone, sometimes not illegitimately because the umpire misses the pitch, but you can beat him with high velocity. You can. And, you know, he plays defensively. You know, he's a better than average first baseman, second baseman. He's an adequate third baseman, and he's an adequate corner outfielder. And he's a guy that I know, and I know they like him, like, for a bunch of reasons. They like him as a guy in the clubhouse. They like him on the team. Mm-hmm. But in Toronto, he's, you know, he's the 25th guy or the 26th guy. And Tapia, when he came over, when they first got him, I just kind of watched him and said, what is this? I don't. You know, like, you kind of looked at his numbers in Colorado and you said, okay, it looks like he's got a little bit of pop maybe, and he looks like he can steal bases. There was, you know, out there they said, you know, he's not really a very good defensive outfielder. And, you know, there's every time I kind of want to write him off, then he goes through a stretch where he looks like he's got reasonably good bat control. The power hasn't really been there, but he hit the home run last night, obviously. Running the bases, we haven't seen a ton of that, but he would be one of their better base stealing threats on this team, but not, it doesn't look like an everyday outfielder. So I think the need for the left-handed bat remains, and whether that, you know, where that is on the list now, I think it's moved down the list since the beginning of the season because they're going to need some fresh arms. But I don't think either of those guys is the solution from the left side.
Yeah, I don't think that they're long-term solutions either. My bigger point of curiosity is like, the whether I've always kind of fall for this stuff, and this is why it's kind of funny that Tapia got traded for Grichuk, is because I used to do this bit every year with Ennis, right? Of it's new Randall, then it was like new Randall, because you would always hear things like Grichuk would say, well, I got a pitching machine and now I'm working on taking walks, and you'd go, oh, okay. Like, all right, Randall. And then, you know, he'd have his month where he looked amazing and you would say to yourself, wow, like, if you remember last year, Grichuk was incredible for them to start the season. Like, they needed him to be Randall Grichuk. Like, when they didn't have George Springer, he was huge. And you talked yourself into it. And I wonder if I'm doing that a little bit with Raimel Tapia. Obviously, the defense isn't quite there. But, yeah, just he's a different kind of player. And when he does seem to have a little bit of a hot streak like this, there are some things that make me like him a little bit more. And I wonder if the Jays will be – Like, if those two guys can continue to be above replacement level, right? Like, if they can just be halfway decent, I don't expect them to, again, have an OPS combined of 850. But if they can kind of hover around, you know, that 780 number combined, I do wonder, like, what the – how it is going to change the math in terms of them adding the lefty bat this season versus just being a little bit more patient and waiting until next year for it.
Yeah, I don't know. This is a big year, and I know the Yankees are what the Yankees are right now. But it's not like this is not a developmental year. You know, it's a developmental year for some guys, but you know, Gabriel Moreno's having a developmental year. But this is a win year, and I just still don't. Maybe Tapia takes advantage of. You know, he has some skills, and he's a really good athlete. With Cavan, I feel more like. I think he's kind of a change of scene candidate at this stage. I'm not sure totally what he is. I think, you know, sometimes with him, people, because of the famous last name and because we got to know him really well in Toronto, you think of him as one of those, well, the blue chip guys, right? Well, there's Vladdy and there's Bo and then there's Cavan, and he's not that. You know, he was not that coming out of college. He was a guy, he was a late draft pick, and he wasn't he was a guy who was going to have to max out to be a major league player. And, you know, to a degree he has, but I kind of think that's what he is. And I do think if this team is going to, like, they're a playoff team. And they have third best record in the American League right now. And I think they're a handful for anybody, you know, today, they're a handful for anybody other than the Yankees. And we'll see, you know, what the Yankees are in October. Probably going to be really good. But I just that if you had a better left-handed bat in that lineup that you could break it up just a little bit. And give teams a little something different to look at. This is no secret, right? Like, Ross Atkins was talking about this last winter at the end of last season. You know, so, you know, what that tells you, it's not easy. And the price is going to be high, potentially. And those guys don't just grow on trees. But at least one of those guys is going to be displaced. I'm with you, though. Like, I there are times with Tapia where I say, you know, as I said, I think, you know, boy, if he ever put it all together. But... You know, there's a reason you trade him for Randall Grichuk, and that's because you've given up on him putting it all together. And you know what? Colorado knew what Grichuk is, and Grichuk has returned to being Grichuk.
Yeah,
you know, he's going to hit some home runs, and he's a fourth outfielder, right? That's what he is right now.
Yeah. Tapia, listen, I can never really truly love. I think that we can. We went through this phase of kind of never caring about outfield defense, corner outfield defense, then caring about it, I think, a little bit too much. Like, there was that Red Sox team from a couple of years ago where they had, like, Mookie Betts and Jackie Bradley Jr. and Benintendi, and we all went, like, that's what you want. This is how you win a championship, is this kind of defensive outfield. And then now I think we've sort of normalized a little bit, but it is always a little bit tougher to kind of, you know, fully invest in a guy that isn't perfect at the dish when they're that in the field. Like, the ball, and it would have been a nice play if he would have made it the other day up against the fence, but, like, you can see right away he knows he didn't make it. And it's just like, yeah, he doesn't take great routes and he doesn't have a good arm at all. Like, when he catches it and there's a runner on third, and he's got to be basically at third base for you to feel like he's going to make that throw. So, yeah, I'm not, I guess I'm not a huge Tapia guy. I would just say to kind of summarize what you're saying, it's like he does put those little stretches together where you go, maybe this guy is just an adjustment away. I am also a little furious that the second I buy in on these guys a little bit, we have you on, like, you know, someone who I respect very much when it comes to your baseball opinion. You're like, no, what are you doing? I'm like, all right, sorry, I just got a little excited. Just having a good month.
Well, no, it's okay. To, like, it could happen. You know, but, like, how often does it actually happen where... No. A player changes his stripes mid-career. Where they,
I should say,
something.
I should
and
know.
It does,
but I don't. I don't actually.
But every once in a while, it does happen, right? Where a guy kind of figures out his game in a different way, and, you know, the stuff that got him to the big leagues, which is not enough to make him a star in the big leagues, and alters. But it's tough. You know, like the guy I always think of is Kevin Pillar, because, you know, Pillar was a great minor league hitter. Right, he won a minor league batting championship. So not and every, you know, and he would come up and you talked about the Grichuk, the new Randall. Like, then how often did we have, well, Kevin Pillar is now going to take some, he's going to take some walks this year. He's learned. And he never took walks, right? Like, he would go through a month and then he would revert. And so I think those, you know, what you are becomes really ingrained by the time you get to the major leagues. And it's, you know, you can try and rebuild a pitcher. We've seen that with the Jays a bunch of times where they try to remake guys' pitching. But I think with a hitter, especially, you know, trying to break your swing down and change it, or You know, it's easy for us to sit back, you know, when you're watching the on-screen strike zone and say, just, you know, change your approach, you know, mm-hmm. take the balls and hit the strikes. But apparently it's tougher than that.
Yeah. God, it really is, huh? Like, that's because on TV it does look pretty simple. Like, there's a huge box, Steven, that sits right there.
Yes. Look at the box.
Yeah, look at that box. It's a perfect outline of the strike zone. Just trust the box. It's pretty good. No, I'm with you, and I think that, yeah, we do have those hopeful stories, and, you know, I think about guys like Edwin and whatever. You're right, but it's just, yeah, I guess the way that I keep looking at this is, how desperate is this team going to be? And the Yankees series sort of did impact me in a way where I went, okay, it's baseball. You get into a series and anybody can win. And yeah, I think that they're going to be a wild card team. They might even host a wild card game. But yeah, what do you think the level of desperation is to add here? Because, like, right now they so clearly need pitching. They had a week where their guys don't get out of the fifth inning and the bullpen is wrecked again. They don't have arms in there. They've got one guy that you really trust in Romano, and then a couple of guys that every once in a while you go, oh yeah, he looked pretty decent today. But for the most part, in a playoff series, you think, like, there's no swing and miss. They're one of the bottom 10, 12 bullpens in all of baseball. Like, basically, however you want to break down the last month, they're just, whether it's war, whether it's, like, even I was talking to Shai yesterday and he goes, well, the last month they had to use the bad guys too much. And I went, yeah, like, but there's a lot of bad guys. Like, there's a lot of not great arms in this pen. Last year, June 29th, that's when they added Simber. They've got this series coming up against the Red Sox, then they've got the Rays. Do you think that they try and get a little aggressive here and try to add an arm or maybe even two before, like, around that date, that June 29th date that happened last year?
It depends. Yeah, I'm sure they're trying. But there's a lot of teams in contention right now, and every, like, this is the one constant, right? Like, every team, maybe, you know, with the exception of the Yankees, although, you know, the Yankees threw Miguel Castro out there and had him get bombed in that last game. So even they may have, you know, there may be a day when the Yankees have a guy who they throw out is not totally indestructible. But every team in baseball is looking for bullpen arms. And I think, you know, the first question is going to be, you know, and I don't know that they're going to, who's it, Sergio Romo just got waived in Seattle, right? There's guys like that. There's going to be guys who you might think of as, you know, let's give him a shot. Let's take a look because he was good last year and he's been bad this year. And then the next step is going to be trading for guys who are, you know, you'd love to trade for guys who are controllable like Simber and Richards were. That, you know, both those moves, and I know Richards, you know, had a tough stretch and he's hurt now, but, you know, Simber was a revelation and you didn't have to give up a ton for him. That was a really clever, you know, that was a very clever early deal. That they don't happen very often. But, yeah, look, if they're there, if there's guys there, the problem they have right now is that they don't have any depth options at AAA. That they've got lots of they've got some organizational pitching coming along, but it's not at AAA. This applies to the starters as well. That, yeah, you know, we're now into looking and you know, they've only run out six starters this year, which is, that's not a lot, right? Like, you look at the years when things go pear-shaped with injuries and stuff, you can run out a lot more than six guys. But who's the seventh guy? You know,
it's Hatch, apparently, which is like, why? Because he's had like no AAA success and he, you know, had a blip as an okay relief pitcher in the majors.
Yeah, if they can, you know, like I think they still think there's something there, but he's not back to what he was during that stretch as a relief pitcher in the majors. And then you're into the Casey Lawrences, right? And I don't know that there's, you know, the one guy in AAA, Ben and I talked about, we keep talking about this guy, is that Adrian Hernandez guy, who is in Buffalo, who's a screwball pitcher. And he's got a trick pitch. And he's been absolutely dominant in AAA. And so they brought up Matt Gage, who's been looked pretty good, right? Who's kind of got an interesting story. He's not a kid, but he's got a really interesting story. He's been pretty effective when they've used him so far. But I would like to see this guy, this Adrian Hernandez guy from Buffalo, just to see if it plays at the major league level. Like, why not at this stage rather than the Jeremy Beasleys of the world? You kind of know what they are. What I don't think they'll do is, you know, crazy fast track somebody young. If they had that guy, you know, like that, this, which, you know, all this leads us to the Nate Pearson conversation eventually. But if they had that guy in AAA right now, or even in AA, who was one of their blue chippers, and you thought, you know, what about using him as a two inning guy in the bullpen because he's got a crazy live arm and they don't, you know, major league hitters haven't seen him yet. I think they'd do that, but I don't think that guy It's just not where they are with their system right now. So that kind of means you got to go out to the marketplace.
Do you put any, like, where's your level of the accountability the front office should have for this? Because this is where I think it gets tricky, because we can say, like, okay, you can build a bullpen, and I'm someone who usually is the, well, I don't want you to go out there and pay for bullpen arms because they're so volatile. Like, we've gotten into that space where it's kind of like, well, whenever you do that, you usually, if it goes wrong, it's the number one thing fans criticize in all of baseball, right? Like, your brand new friend of the game knows that take, right? Like, you don't overpay for bullpen, blah, blah, blah. But this is now 2 years in a row where it's been an issue. And yeah, it's better than it was last year. There's no doubt about it. And it was better on paper coming into the season. But when you look around baseball and there's just so many teams with big swing and miss arms, and that's the way that bullpens are being built now. And it's not like, oh, wow, this just happened overnight. It's like, no, this is the way that bullpens have been being built now for a while, like 6-7 years. I have a tough time looking at it and saying, well, you don't have any of those arms in AAA, you don't have any of those arms in AA, and you didn't sign any of those arms. Like, at some point, there's got to be a little bit of reconciliation with these guys. Like, hey, you can't keep getting away with this.
Well, I'm not sure. Like, you got to tell me who the... Like in terms of signing guys, you know, as I say, like a guy like Sergio Romo, who was coming off an insanely great year, just got DFA'd. So they are volatile. Like, that's true, especially veteran guys. They went out and got Jimmy Garcia, who has been, you know, not always great, but pretty good. And they do, you know, their closer has been terrific. They haven't used him a ton in the last month because they've been in, you know, blowout games one way or the other. So he hasn't, but they, you know, the back end of the bullpen hasn't really been as much the issue. And I, again, the issue in terms of the kind of swing and miss guys coming, like, what you want are live young arms coming through the organization. And it's just, you know, there's a bit of a dead spot here right now, you know, at that level. If you look at what's coming from, you know, like, look at the staff in Buffalo right now, or not in Buffalo right now, in Vancouver right now, you know, It's really, and some of those guys may be fast tracked. Like, we might be talking about them next year, but it's just that there's a little bit of a dead spot pitching wise. And I think going out and getting those guys mid season is, like, just about everybody does it. Now again, this year's hot commodity on the free agent market might be next year's dud. Like, that happens. So I think the swing and miss, you know, again, ideally, I don't think you want to pay. I think ideally you don't want to pay relief pitchers for what they've done. You know, like, past performance, name value. You know, David Robertson may be the exception to that, because, you know, he's kind of looking like himself, his old self right now, and he'll be an interesting guy in the market. But man, I think if you pay guys for what they used to be or for the saves they racked up 2 years ago, I'm not sure it's ever, you know, it's very rarely a good investment. I think you need that to come, like, ideally that comes internally. And I know, I say the Nate Pearson thing is just heartbreaking, but I don't think they were stretching him out to be a starter this year. I think they thought he was going to be a one or two inning guy this year, and there's a swing and miss guy in theory. And God knows what's going on there now.
Yeah, what do you think the expectations are for the future with Nate Pearson? It'd be nice to feel confident about him for once, but he has another setback this weekend. Like, where do you evaluate what you can expect from him in his time with the Blue Jays?
I don't know. I reached out to a guy who's on his team, you know, in the last 24 hours to say, hey, what's going on there now? And there, he's in the dark. So everybody's in the dark right now, I assume, you know, where the tests are being performed. Shoulders are bad. I know this is self-evident, but, you know, elbow injuries in pitchers are fixable a lot of the time. But, you know, Tommy John is common. You know, 16-year-olds are having Tommy John at work, so you can put a new UCL and, you know, be good as new pretty much. You can even do it twice. But shoulder problems are harder to fix. And if this is anything serious shoulder-wise, I don't want to be too gloom and doom. I hope it's not much. But, you know, and he hasn't had, the weird thing is, with all his injuries, he has not had arm injuries. Like, that's not been his issue. He had a broken arm he had his arm broken on a line drive, but that's not a pitching injury. And the people, you know, one of the things people liked about him is that biomechanically he's really sound, you know, that his body and the way he throws, he's built to throw the ball 100 miles an hour, which not everybody is. And they thought that he had a chance to be pretty durable. You know, there's the opposite, right? Where there are people who can look at a pitcher's delivery and say, but you know, his elbow's going to explode at some point here. It's just a matter of when. They didn't say that about Nate. So this is the first time it's really been, you know, it hasn't been a sports hernia or mononucleosis or any of the other myriad things that have gone wrong for him. And the fact that it's quiet, you know, I think a lot of people are being consulted here. You know, I suspect this is they're going to be really thorough and really careful, because you know, it's like shoulders ominous. You know, forearm tightness, you know, when you hear forearm tightness, the next sentence is often Tommy John. But shoulder injury, man, yeah, I hope it's just, you know, a passing thing. And I feel for the kid. He's like, it's not his fault.
He might be cursed.
Yeah, feels like he's under a black cloud.
Doesn't he walk around under
a black cloud?
Oh, yeah. Boy. Okay, before I let you go, one more on pitchers. Seeing Gausman tonight, to put it simply, he just hasn't been himself. Second time in three starts, he hasn't pitched more than four innings. He said he didn't have the energy to go last time. Just like, how important is tonight's game for him as a bounce back, and what to expect from someone that's kind of been in a rut here?
Yeah, it's important for him. It's important for the team. You know, they need some length, just to, so they don't completely fry the bullpen, and they need him to be as good as he's been. I think this is one of those, you know, it's a cliche, but I think it's, yeah, the energy thing was a weird thing to say, but you know, I think teams kind of figured out a little bit what he was doing to them, and they started to, you know, whether he was tipping his pitches or not, which the Jays certainly suspected he was tipping his pitches. They were aware of that before the conversation started about whether he was tipping his pitches. So, you know, it's easy to say don't tip your pitches. It's sort of like that strike zone thing. But, you know, if you've been doing something the same way over and over again, it's hard to get, you know, little quirks that they might have picked up on. It's hard to get rid of them. I think history will tell you he'll be fine. But he may have to, you know, he and the catcher and whoever catches him tonight and all of the guys who kind of plot out the pitch sequencing in a game, or may have to do something to, you know, so that all of that tape they have, you know, all of that video they have of his past performances, that they can surprise people a little bit. You know, maybe, you know, it may be a little bit about approach and sequencing as well. Like, I think his arm's fine. You know, like, the stuff looks good and the fastball velocity is still really good, but it's like they're sitting on pitches. And I don't care who you are. If there's, you know, if hitters feel like they know what's coming, they can hit it.
Yeah. Well, Brent, a pleasure as always to talk to us this morning. Thanks for coming on. We'll chat soon.
All right. See you guys.
Thanks, Stephen.
Stephen Brent, our guy, the legend, Sportsnet. We can hear them later today. Hopefully no more doom and gloom with pitching, but it's a tough spot right now for the Blue Jays to be in.
No, he's right. That quote from Gausman is weird.
Yeah.
Saying you don't have the energy, saying, like, putting it that way that you're fatigued and it's June, and they just gave you a huge bag of money to be a starting pitcher. It's spooky, especially considering, like, hey, the knock on Gausman last year, everybody, was that he wore down as the season went on. Like, that was the scary thing with Gausman when they signed him. So, yeah, buddy, you got to pitch better. That's what the money's for. And this team is built, and their success is predicated upon your success. So tonight, White Sox, get past the fifth inning and do it successfully. And it is a little worrisome. I'm sorry. This is always you'll remember, again, why did people not want to re-sign Robbie Ray? Well, one is that he hadn't had the track record. And so they went, okay, Sky might be a creation of this team, and we don't know how sustainable it's going to be, and blah, 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 blah. Well, it wasn't like Kevin Gausman has racked up 25 Cy Youngs throughout his career, everybody. Like, he came over here. This is your classic, the guy that comes over from someplace is always, like, way sexier than the other dude. Like, Gausman has pitched a bunch. He's had some good years. You know, his final season in Baltimore, he was, you know, he started 34 games. When he went to Atlanta that season, he was he really quality with them in 2018. The innings that he gave them, he started to turn around a little bit. But his career, like, it's been basically these last 2 years in San Francisco, where he's really looked like, oh, okay, this guy. And it's been limited. Like, one of those years, he only made 10 starts. Last year, where he was the All-Star and he made was the Cy Young sixth runner-up, that's his, like, sterling season. That was the, oh, my God, Kevin Gausman thing. But the criticism for no Robbie Ray, or the argument against Robbie Ray, was that he only throws two pitches. And what happens if you lose a little bit off of one of those pitches? And so, yeah, it's natural, I think, a little bit to fear the Gausman thing right now, where if, like Steven just said it, if he's only throwing a fastball, teams are going to pick up on that. You can have the world's greatest fastball, teams are going to get it. There's a reason why relief pitchers are relief pitchers. They usually only have a couple of pitches that work. And right now, Gausman only has the one that's fooling people. So, yeah, I do think that this is an important stretch. And if he gets batted around tonight, I do think that the panic level is going to kind of skyrocket through the roof. The Kikuchi thing has obviously been a disaster to this point. They don't have Ryu. And I love Ross Stripling to death. The guy battles. He gives you what they ask of him. But I'm not confusing myself and thinking like, oh, okay, all of a sudden they can be leaning on Ross Stripling in a playoff game in a non-relief appearance. Like, no, it's not happening. Anyway, big night for Gausman. It's time for something to chew on. Brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
So yesterday, Sham Sharania. We're a couple of days away from the NBA draft. So it's NBA rumor season, baby. Let's go. One of my favorite times of the year. We hear like 1,000 rumors before the NBA draft. And then usually, very frequently, there's not a ton of movement. Teams don't end up usually trading out of these spots, all these different things. So there's a report that comes from Shams that Kyrie and the Nets are quote-unquote at an impasse. And that if he hits the market, if he tests the market, the Lakers, the Knicks, and the Clippers would be interested. And that sounds like one hell of a splashy headline. But the thing to chew on here is, where did this come from? Kyrie Irving posts something on Twitter yesterday. It's Brother Mazzone from The Wire just smiling and looking through the fence, which again, like, I think Bomani Jones said it best. If you're trying to interpret Kyrie or you think you know what he's saying, you're crazier than he is, because you have no idea what Kyrie's thinking. I don't think Kyrie knows what he's thinking half the time. This is a bunch of BS to me. I don't buy this. I think it's fake news. Kyrie, you look at the Lakers cap situation, look at the Clippers cap situation, look at the Knicks. The Knicks have like the most plausible moves. But are they going to clear heaven and earth? They're going to move heaven and earth to make sure they can clear cap space for Kyrie Irving, who just couldn't make it work with Kevin Durant in the same state? I don't know that. I don't believe that. They just came off of an awful year where they gave Julius Randle a big bag of money, and he turned out to be a problem for them, like a malcontent who is moody and who is not living up to his contract. Saying the Knicks are interested to me is like, it's a bit of a reach. The Lakers have absolutely no financial wiggle room to make this work unless Kyrie decides that he's going to play for no money. And
apparently he had a very lengthy phone call with LeBron James.
Yeah.
That's how it was worded. Very lengthy.
There's no way that the Lakers are going to be able to make some kind of a Russell Westbrook trade work with the Nets. The Nets aren't going to entertain it. They would never play Russ. They're not going to reunite him with Kevin Durant. Those two obviously had a falling out. There's no way KD's career ends with Russ. LeBron can do all he wants to try to get Kyrie, and maybe it does end up happening in some weird way, but I just don't see it. I think that Kyrie's a little bit over a barrel right now, and he's pissed about it.
He's got a June 29 deadline on his player option, so that's pretty soon.
But this is it. So, like, he basically has to opt into the player option to make some of these, like, trades work. Mm. And I don't think that he's going to do that, because that would be extremely dumb from a future financial standpoint. Nobody opts into one-year deals. Not when you're that level of a player. Not in a marketplace that people will pay. Someone would pay Kyrie. And the Nets will pay Kyrie. I just find it extremely hard to believe that this isn't a negotiation tactic to try to scare the Nets and go, well, if not me, what is the plan then? Like, what are you going to do if not me? And that's his point. And the Nets are going, we just don't want to pay you. We can't trust you. How are we supposed to trust you? You've done nothing but betray that trust. You've made Steve Nash lose his mind. You chased James Harden from town. He quit this team because he didn't want to be around you. And now Kevin Durant isn't exactly out there publicly stumping for you. Maybe he is behind the scenes. Maybe KD knows that he needs Kyrie. We all accept how talented Kyrie is, but he's an absolute wild card. And I just, the idea that teams are lining up to clear the deck to get Kyrie Irving, I think is false. I think there's a lot of teams that would take Kyrie given the proper situation, but, and the Lakers being one of them, like, because LeBron still has a lot of weight there and whatever, and like, what else are they going to do? But yeah, I just...
Kyrie's Nets career, 103 games played, 123 games missed.
Yeah.
Not a lot of certainty there.
Not a lot of certainty. Plus, you have to deal with, like, the guy.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I just don't... If it's crazy because, again, he's one of my favorite players to watch ever. Like, when he's on the floor, he's one of my favorite guys to watch ever. And he is just... the one of the guys in the league that I would, if I'm a fan of the team, I'm going, oh God, not this. Like, I don't want to experience what the Kyrie Irving thing is. Anyways, let's take a break. Let's come back and take your texts. And by the way, I don't bother with the Raptors text. He's not coming to Toronto. he's not going to be a Raptor. It's the Fan Morning Show. JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. Text 590-590, DMs at JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar. That's next.
590 The Fan.
The Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan, JD and Ailish, text line Tuesday. We got some comments on my F1 experience, which validate my claims at the beginning of the 6 o'clock hour. So Colin sent me a DM on Instagram at Ailish4far.
I thought you were saying Colin. I was like, no, we don't do that.
Colin, C-O-L-I-N. No, it's not the Colin line. You are correct about all the F1 complaints. Five of us have been going since 2014 from Aurelia. We are the on-track ambulance's worst logistics ever. We're on the track by 6 daily, can't leave the island until after 8 p.m. We usually pick up random people when we leave and drive them across the bridge in our shuttle vehicle. You should see the organization of the on-track personnel. Complete bleep show, yet it always works out. It's an experience. Colin knows. Mm-hmm. Colin knows what I went through. I appreciate the boost of it's not just a me thing, it's an everybody thing. Thank you for that, Colin.
Yeah, like I said, it's obvious that the venue is bad. I guess just to me is if Colin has gone so many times, so many years over, like it's pretty tough when there's no adjustment you can make. Mm-hmm. Your thing, I told you, you didn't get a high blame on that scale.
Thank you.
Your only blame that you got on the scale was that you didn't try to use public transit or use public transit. Because it's like when going to a stadium, that to me is always the way. Like people who drive to stadiums are nuts. Like, the parking is insane, and I don't want to hear it even from you if you live in the suburbs. Like, there's GO trains. Like, there's park and rides. There are options to this thing. It's why the Jays the other day, like, they were nuts. Mark Shapiro did that whole thing of, hey, don't do live TO or active TO because we need people to have the highway. And I agree. Like, listen, active TO is the all-time dumbest thing that we've ever had. Like, it was fine during the pandemic, but now it's over. Like, stop shutting down the highway for people to run. Like, go run anywhere else, bozos. Go bike anywhere else. Like, this city has horrible, horrible, horrible congestion issues, and you're making it worse. Like, I can't believe people don't ride in the streets. Honest to God, it's insane that we're still doing this.
Right.
No, it should. It should be like Vancouver. It should be like Vancouver. Like, people should be burning cars, like, go nuts. But you do have transit options always, and they're always better. I'm sorry. It just... like, and I guess, like, maybe there's situations with little kids. Like, if you got a little kid, you're like, oh, well, it's easier to get them in the car seat. And I'm like, okay, you can stretch me for that one. But everything else is just, no. Get
I will say,
to park and ride.
The lines for the metro were also at least a 45-minute wait to get on, as I heard from other people that went on the metro.
Yeah, I'm
obviously
sure
better, but still terrible. Okay.
Yeah.
I had another question in the text line. Pete from Oshawa. Are the drinks at F1? And I said, the only option, I guess it's sponsored by Heineken, for beer was canned Heineken small 330 milliliter cans for $8.
That's a good can.
But I will say,
that's not bad.
You could buy an unlimited amount. So we just bought a case. And walked around.
You could buy a case. Unlimited amount at one time.
Yes. You know how sometimes you get limited to like two beers? They don't let you buy as many.
Like this.
It was Trey Bien, I tell you that. You buy the whole case at the front of the line and you don't ever go back.
C'est tellement beau, ça. Like, I'm into that. Like, that's great. Like, see, yeah, if you can post up with as many beers as you want at one time, that's phenomenal.
A perk. That was in the pros column.
The old tiny like Heineken can, that's a good can. The only thing is you buy so many, and you obviously didn't have a cooler, I'm guessing. Like,
no, we did. We were so unprepared. People brought coolers and chairs. Yeah. Like, I didn't know any of this.
I know. I'm just saying that the person who didn't even bother to Google things and just thought, like, I'm going to wear pants. That's your plan. Your whole plan was your pants. That was the end of your – tell me I'm wrong. You're making a face. Tell me I'm wrong. Was your plan beyond pants?
No. Yeah. I had totally admitted I was at fault for a lot of these things. As were many other people, so nonetheless, you could buy a case of beer. So that was kind of a really fun thing.
I love how you keep lumping in the other people. Yeah. Like, as were many of the other people.
To agree with my pain.
But yeah, your pants plan didn't. It was like you were like, sweet, that was good for your 1 second of photo shoot. But you're no cooler as you got all the beers. Like, how many beers did you buy? You said a case. How many were like
in
absolutely
case?
Rock? Like, the hot as the sun.
We had to drink them fast enough to keep them cold.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, there's no way that you guys crushed
those. They were so little, though. Like, they're not like a tall boy. Like, you drink a king can, and by the middle of it, it's like warm.
All I know is if I'm paying $8 for a beer, I'd like it to be cold. That's all.
It wasn't bad. It was hot that day, though, but, you know, they kind of insulate each other in the box and keep each other cool.
Okay.
Lower on my concerns.
No, JD in Toronto. Tell me about the party on Saturday night.
Oh, yes. So we got invited. This was really fun. Very much a perk of being friends with really cool people to this Maxim party on Saturday night. That was, I think it was sponsored by Williams, and it was in an old train station in Montreal. Like, when I say party clubbing, it was insane, like an actual club, people wearing like club dresses, bottle service. I have not been to anything like that since I was in my college days when that was kind of appropriate. The most famous people I've ever seen in one collection of space, it was NHL, NFL, famous musicians, actors, actresses, Canadian women's Olympic hockey team, Sportsnet on air hosts. It was, yeah. Oh my God. It was
really. What Sportsnet on air hosts were there other than you?
Me.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say, give me some celebrity names. I need some names.
I saw our guy, Russell Martin. I tried to talk to him, but then I got nervous and I said, no thanks. A bunch of NHLers.
You had it in. Hey, Russ, I just interviewed you.
I know,
you
but I didn't want to be like, hey, Russell, remember Russ on the radio?
But you didn't have to stop. It's like, you could have just stopped for a second and been like, hey, Russ, just want to say hi. I'm Ailish. I spoke to you on the fan in Toronto the other day.
I had a couple of adult beverages. I didn't want to embarrass myself. Okay.
That's how it's called, liquid courage, not liquid cowardice.
I know. I just want to act like I've been there before. Okay. So some of the cast from Euphoria.
You haven't, though.
Some of the cast from Euphoria.
Ooh, who? Sydney Sweeney?
No, it wasn't her, but some other people. Some of the cast from Riverdale. Arkells, another people we know, definitely chatted them up. Well, Jim Hamilton, what's up?
Go. So you had enough courage. Honestly, that's a real shot at the Arkells that you were like, I was too scared to talk to anybody. But then the Arkells, you went like, yeah, just blah, blah. Just went over. You guys, Hamilton.
Who else? So we saw T-Pain perform, who was actually incredible. He was really, really good. Blake's a full 45-minute set. Wyclef Jean performed. He was like going through the crowd. He was like giving the mic to people. That was really cool.
I saw
DJs.
The ladies touching up on wire.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He was. Yeah. He was like, "Hey, ladies, get in my booth and let's grind it out."
Hey, ladies, get in my booth and let's grind it out.
Is that exactly what he said? Basically. Bunch of NHLers: Binnington, Dylan Cousins, Josh Anderson. A lot of guys that are Montreal based. Binnington isn't, I guess he was just there partying. Matthew Joseph and his brother, bunch of hockey players. Max Comtois.
Comtois.
Yeah, lots of people. Like, it was just like,
that's,
it was
pretty stacked. That's,
it was crazy. And we like, you know, it's hard to see people, but there's also a VIP section all roped off, so you didn't really know who was in there. But really cool experience. Had a blast. Didn't get home till way past my bedtime.
How many times did, because you were with the Olympics, like you were with
all of the Olympics, yes.
No, you were there with the entire Olympics. They were all there.
It was really cool because Marie was super famous and people came up to be really congratulatory.
But this is what I'm saying. How many people congratulated you on a gold medal and how many times were you like, thank you?
You know,
like,
that, yeah. I was milking
I know, that's
it.
What I'm saying. You jumped in. Tell the truth.
Hell, like, yeah. Why would you not? I'm not gonna be, actually, I didn't win an Olympic gold medal.
I know.
I was like, thanks so much.
Stolen valor. This is stolen valor.
I have no shame. What was I supposed to say? Like,
nothing. Well, you know, it was just, you could have gone, I'm not on the team. But yeah.
Right. Hey, I'm in this cool VIP section with the Olympians, but I'm actually not.
They're like, and the Canadian Olympic team is here, and you're like, woo, we did it.
We were told to arrive at 10:45 for red carpet and interviews, and there was a photo of all of us, and I'm the only one that, I'm going to try to find it. I'm the only one that's not an Olympian or gold medalist, and I'm standing in the photo just like, let me get here.
I won. You did it. Lifelong dream. This is kind of like, you know.
Fun. I was living it up.
Yeah, this is an incredible amount of stolen valor. I love it.
You would have done the same.
Well, I wouldn't have. I don't think
there's no way
story.
You would have been like, hi, actually, I'm J.D. Bunkus, and I didn't win the Stanley Cup with all of these guys celebrating the Stanley Cup.
No, here's the thing. I definitely would, and here's why. There's two reasons. Number one, no one would ever believe it. No one would ever look at me be like, there's
a
Stanley Cup.
That's very accurate, actually.
There's this guy. No one's going to see me standing next to Dylan Cousins and go, you know what? Both those guys, UConn, born and raised, Stanley Cup champions. Like, it's not going to happen. And two is just, I am the type of person who's like, no. Like, I would be the one. If it was like a big thing and it's like keep it moving type of thing, no. But if someone was to ask me the question, I'd be like, no. I've never been able to pull those kind of lies off. That's never been thing of mine.
Well, PK Subban was on stage the whole night. I sent you a video. He was like dancing, DJing. He was, I honestly.
Yeah, he loves the limelight.
Yeah, he was the star of the show. I forgot about PK.
Yeah. Like, I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah, the video I sent you, I should have, I kept that off the internet.
I mean, usually the thing is to be like, oh, yeah, whatever. Let the celebrity do their thing. Don't, especially since you had to act like you. That's where you have to act like you've been there before when you're doing this.
Like, I posted the two performers, but I wasn't going to be like, look at me in Bennington.
No, whatever. I would say that it is weird. I've only been to one party like this before, too, where it's just like you're in there with just an insane amount of celebrities and, like, current professional athletes. And it's just, it's a weird feeling when it's everybody in one place and it's like a collection of different people from different places and different sports, rather than, you know, if any of those people one off came into the building and sat down and did an interview with you or I, you wouldn't be like, oh, wow. But it is a cool feeling to be in a room like that where there's just like so many people doing their thing and having a fun night out. So that's
World's Strongest Man was there. Hugo Gerard,
the guy from Game of Thrones.
No, I don't think he's the World's Strongest Man anymore.
Well, he is to me.
This guy is technically the world's strongest man, and he lifted up a couple of us.
Are you serious?
Oh yeah.
He went up. Where is this? This is the stuff. This is the content that I wanted. I didn't need like PK Subban on stage. I was like, okay.
I'll lift you up, and like nothing.
What, are you just walking around offering that to people?
Literally.
That's so lame. I like, was he wearing like a name tag that said world's strongest man?
Oh, you could tell he was the world's strongest man. Yeah. I'm going to send you a photo of him. There's no way he has to get custom, like custom suits that fit his arms. Like he's just.
No, but he was wearing, see, that's funny that he's wearing a suit because I actually just pictured him walking around in his singlet. Like, you guys want to get picked up by world's strongest man? No. Walk around the party and he's just got like a friend who's doing like, Hugo, please, why do we always have to do this? No one's telling you to do this.
That's all I can remember right now, but I'll take a look
through texts?
Videos. Yeah, a couple of videos. I mean, texts. A-list reporting from sports events is my favorite segment. Okay, stay tuned. Okay, so here's one about today's Wing Sanity. Can we bet Wing Sanity today? You can bet Wing Sanity during the Wake and Rake. We'll give some odds. He said Wake and Rake missed last night on Sam's Barrios strikeouts.
Yeah, listen, Sam doesn't count, all right? Like, his bet didn't count. Yes, my bet hit, Blake's bet hit, as they normally do.
I'm back, so hopefully I can bring
it. Yeah, you're back. We're trying to go 3 for 3. Blake's and mine were, like, easy walk-away wins. But, yeah, McKee just blew it. Like, the Barrios strikeout number was, like, it was never the Barrios strikeout
number. What was the odds on it? A number over-under?
It was 5.5, I think, and McKee got one punch out. So, that's tough. Not close. That's a tough one. That's a real loss. That's not a bad luck loss. That's a real loss.
That's bad. Okay, here's a question I have for you. So there was a restaurant in downtown Denver called West of Surrender Saloon and Kitchen. And they had taped a Tampa Bay Lightning jersey to the ground as a doormat.
Yeah, I saw that.
We're encouraging everyone to please wipe their feet before sitting down for a nice meal. Bad juju? This was while they were up 2-0. I'm sure it's still there, but I know you're the juju king.
Yeah, this is a fine juju. This isn't like a national jersey. Like, that's not the women's hockey team in Salt Lake City where it's like, hey, this is a, you know, oh my God, they stepped on
a flag
uniform. Yeah. This is a sports bar and they bought a jersey to use. Like, yeah, it's like, first of all, a billion places have probably done that. You just haven't heard of it. And yeah, I don't know. I think it's kind of funny, but that's not a juju thing. That's not even like, that doesn't even like perk the antenna of me. Like, fan behavior like that is not – if they would have had a fake Stanley Cup and they were, like, passing around the bar being like, we're winning the Stanley Cup, then I'd have been like, ooh, this is a little bit much. But no, not that.
Okay, what about Ross Colton last night flashing two fingers and then one finger at the Avalanche while the game was still going on after he had the fight? Is that bad juju?
I love that. Love that. That's the moment of the game. I'm so glad you brought that up for me. No, seriously. Ross Colton doing that was the biggest, just, that was some.
He's got 1 point in the last 5 games.
Who cares? That's Walter White saying, I am the man who knocks. That's him in the desert staring down the competition and telling them, they dictate the terms. They're the Tampa Bay Lightning. You gave them life. They just won 2 cups, not you. 2-1 to them is him saying, we could not be more comfortable than the position that we are in, and you guys have all the pressure on you going into the next game. 2-1. Like, they're so sick that a brag is saying they're down in a series. Like, it is, if they win this series, that goes down as one of the iconic moments from the run, straight up. I love that move. That's not bad juju. That's bad juju if you've never won. If you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, you lose every year in the first round. That's a dorky move. You're the Tampa Bay Lightning? Don't you know who we are? 2-1. Go sit in the dressing room and think about that and spend a night in Tampa. When you're in your hotel bed at night, staring up at that ceiling, you think about how the Tampa Bay Lightning are only down 1 game in a playoff series and how good you felt when you're up 2-0 and now it's 2-1. We're coming. Love it. I'm the man who knocks.
Okay. I'm glad that you don't see bad juju in either of those. Because you don't need that in the remainder of the series. All right. We're going to talk to Matthew Barnaby after the break. See if he thinks there's any bad juju. 15 years in the NHL. He knows. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.